Hey everyone, welcome back to Huron County Author Talk, a podcast where we speak to many talented local authors about a variety of topics within the world of writing. I'm your host, Hamilton Baker of the Huron County Library, and I'm excited to bring you another episode in Season 2. If you're a writer, a reader, or someone who likes to hear authors talk about their craft, how they publish their books, different marketing strategies they employ, and much more, then this show is for you. In this episode, Wendy Million, David Yates, Judy Keitley, and Barry Broman joined me at the Goderich Library for a roundtable discussion. This time around, the group talks about different writing processes, including how to write a first draft, how and when ideas strike, and practical strategies for crafting characters. They also talk about what makes a compelling character, how to give your main character a flaw or wound, how sometimes the villain of a story is more interesting than the hero, and much more. Enjoy.
But do all of you write directly on the computer, or do you write in longhand first?
Computer.
Yeah.
I'm like you, Judy. I write longhand. My first draft.
I find that when I write on the computer, but I'll find myself writing strings of dialogue. 3 or 4 pages sometimes of just back and forth, and then I have to go back and then rewrite the story that fits where the dialogue is. I guess that's the way it works in my head. So I'll just put an initial beside the dialogue and I'll have this pages of it. Mm-hmm. And then go back and then what lines am I gonna keep? What won't I keep? Where do I need a description? Where do I gotta set the, and then I flush it out that way. When I wrote the screenplay, that like scenes just kept coming to me and I was writing them out. I had 30 pages of dialogue and it was all, then it took weeks to sort it out. Mm-hmm. Like in what order the scenes even had to be.
Oh, really?
And what to try to make sense of it all. Mm-hmm. But I never thought that I would want to write that way. Because before that I would just write sequentially, you know, just description and where that dialogue came naturally. And I thought, well, I feel really bogged down. So I just thought, I'm just going to go with it. I'm just going to write all the dialogue as it keeps coming to me, the scene, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. And that gets it out of my system.
Right, that sounds
then,
like it works.
Then the work starts.
Right.
Right. Then yeah. The work starts.
Exactly. But I mean, you're doing it the right way because I've been taught years ago and I've been doing it now for a long time is, the first step is just you write creatively. You talked about it, Judy, too. You write creatively first, and you don't worry about the editing part when you're doing that first. You're writing, you know, 3 or 4 pages. You're not, at least that's the way I have worked. Mm-hmm. You do the creative part first, and then you do the work. And the editing later, after that you've already done that process.
Yeah.
Which is why I write freehand, because
I try not to stop and edit, otherwise I'd never get on. I mean, I just want to, when I'm in a writing mode, it just flows and I don't want it to be interrupted. So I don't stop and edit. I do that the next day. I let it percolate a bit, then the next day I'll reread what I've written and I might make a few changes then, but essentially I don't stop and start, otherwise I'd be crossing out things all along. No.
I've tried dictating. Have you tried voice-to-text dictating?
No. Yep. I'm currently doing my latest book on the microphone on the computer. But there again, I do one chapter talking, you know, reading it in, and then I have to go back because sometimes it's written, it's taken this, made up a whole lot of stuff that I never said.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting, the editing of it, but it's still quicker than typing it up on the computer.
I think I tried it once, and again, it seems like I need to, at least the first time, I have to do the kind of pen to paper, or it just doesn't mm-hmm. come the way normally. If I do it a different way, it doesn't work as well, basically.
And that's it, finding what works for him.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I tried that. I tried to just, you know, talk. And sometimes, you know, I'll be driving and I'll have an idea and then I'll record something, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right? But I can't, you know, like John said, blah, 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 or, you know, quotations. Because I think when you do voice to text, you'd have to say
yes.
quotation, right? You have to verbally say the punctuation.
Yeah.
Or which, go back and edit it pretty severely afterwards, yeah.
right? So, right. Whereas
You do.
And
I'm still on, not sure whether it's worth all, because the editing is quite severe, mm-hmm. whether or not, you know, you're wasting or saving any time by doing that rather than just doing traditionally typing it all in. So, yeah. I don't know.
You mentioned getting, you know, in the car, voice in the recorder. I find in the car is my best time to write, or the best time of thinking time.
Ideas, right?
The ideas. Mm-hmm. I like to, okay, I'm going, I know tomorrow morning I'm driving down to Oakville. So I'm going to, before, when I get in the car, I'm going to think before, as I start driving, what question am I trying to answer in the story right now? And I just focus on the question and the character and the question and the character. And then, you know, the emptiness of driving, your mind is blank and things just come into your head.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to type when you're driving, I find. So yeah, I take the voice recorder.
That's what I do with my phone, right? It's just, mm-hmm. you just hit record and then you say whatever the idea is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah.
But yeah, that's a great time just to ponder the question of how am I going to get this to happen.
The shower too, sometimes.
Yeah.
I'll have ideas in the shower. And then I keep saying that, you know, if it's two or three lines of something that I want to remember.
I'm not going to forget this.
Yeah. I try. I will. So I keep saying it over and over in my head again and again, just so until I can write it down, right?
Yeah. I think I've forgotten as much as I've written.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've got to stop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another part of craft, which we haven't touched on really, is character. We've touched on it at a couple other meetings a little bit, but like for instance myself, I learned this process of at least the main characters ahead of time. I think it was a book I read or something said, find a photo of like somebody in a magazine or online or whatever, and that's your character's photo, and then you have that printed, so you know, you start with that, and then you can kind of, you know, add a little bit of profile or background also, and then
so you find that character's photo or picture helps.
Basically, yeah, I like for my book, I think I Googled it. I just Googled some man or woman or something, and then just went through a bunch of people's photos. And you just find, because I kind of already knew what the characters looked like in my head. So I eventually found a photo. Oh, yeah, that's pretty much that character. Like, that's pretty much what he looks like. So then I took it out and I actually had it on my wall, especially during the first draft. As I was writing, I could just refer to that mm-hmm. photo just as an easy visual, which I know that that was the first time I'd done that in writing other books. It was a challenge to keep track of characters because I would just put myself in everybody before,
yeah.
right? All my characters would be somewhat similar because I was in all of them, mm-hmm. more or less. So yeah, that really helped me kind of get myself out of there because there was a picture of somebody else and that's that character, not me.
That's interesting. I would say I always start with like the wound or the flaw that I know my character has. Like, what is it that's stopping them from getting what they want? And then that's kind of how I build them out from there. I would say what they look like is probably pretty low on the threshold for me, which is weird because I write romance. So you would think that would be something that would be like a high thing, but as long as you make them super attractive, like it's
whatever. Yeah, that's all that matters. Yeah.
They look great. There you go.
Yeah. I like that because, well, the arch of the story is overcoming the flaw.
Yeah.
Overcoming, that's the starting point. I like that.
Yeah.
How you do that. I really like Len, was it, said this parking a truck between characters. I really took that to heart and I went back and reread the first three chapters and started the whole idea, okay, maybe I need to do this character sketching, because I'd never done that before. I just written and then try to keep it separate, right? Keep them.
Remind me what Len said, because I can't remember.
He had said, you need to be able to park a truck between your characters.
Meaning?
Meaning that the people aren't similar. There's no similarities.
Oh, like I was talking about how all mine were similar.
You have little pieces, too many, right? You have to be able to draw straight, distinct lines between them, and there's, of course, people have some similarities, but you got to start at a point where there's nothing. Mm-hmm. And like a different flaw or different strengths, and then it's okay if some similarities creep in, but you and stay true to those, you know, park a truck between them.
Right.
These two different personalities, or three different personalities, however many you've got. It's a whole parking lot full, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I like that way of he said that, because I went back and myself, I don't take pictures. I have pictures of, because I'm writing for kids, so I have pictures of my kids' friends in my head. Oh, this is that, that's that kid, that's that kid, that's that friend. So I use my own kids' faces or their friends. So I explained to my kids, because they always want to read over my shoulder. Like, I know I'm calling this one, but that's really, you know, everybody will get their turn in the book. And then at the end, none of your names are going to be in here, because we're probably going to, we'll probably be edited into different names. Mm-hmm. But I like your idea of finding it totally, because if you need a real different character, find somebody, Google it, in fact, you can just Google a picture.
Yeah, at least for me it works, especially mm-hmm. when my book is set over 2,000 years ago, so yeah. it's definitely nobody familiar, I guess. It's mm-hmm. just, yeah, I found strangers. I just had stranger pictures that I had no mm-hmm. idea who they were or what, why they had a picture on the internet. I had no idea. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it seemed to work. It helps me park the truck, basically, yeah. They are now, after the first draft even, because that was my struggle before, after the first draft I have to go and try and fix it. But this time around, they had their own unique traits, and they were characters on their own, not blended with mm-hmm. with me in there.
Yeah. And all their motives have to be different, part, you know, separate, different motives, different, yeah, exactly. Different,
but you got to keep, yeah, when you're writing the scene, mm-hmm. you got to keep in mind
their perspectives, all their perspectives.
Because, yeah, I know I have to think about that one. Mm-hmm. It would be easier if I just had this character agree, and then it would just smoothly go through the scene. But I know that I was just writing a scene recently that I found myself wanting to just, yep, I'll just tie this scene up in a nice bow and they'll agree or whatever. But then I had to stop myself and say, no, this character would not agree in this case because he has his own motives. So I got to make sure, like you were saying before, stay true to that character's motives or that character's traits, right?
Or you need to write a story about, you know, five clones.
Right. Yeah.
But actually, I don't know if you saw that movie with he kept making clones and the clones made clones of themselves. And what was that? It was.
Was that the Keanu Reeves one?
Oh, I'm older than that.
Okay.
Anyway, but then.
So was that the 70s?
No, I think it might have been in the 80s. Anyway, the clones, but then you made a copy of a copy of a copy, and then how things kept becoming flawed, and then the characters kept, even though they looked identical physically, the traits became more and more and more flawed and exaggerated, and it was actually bigger trucks between the characters. So clones don't work, I guess.
Right. No. Check out books written by local authors at the library. Visit our website at HuronCountyLibrary.ca to place a hold today. But yeah, flaws, that's one thing about characters that are important. Mm-hmm. And do you find yourself, like, I don't know, reusing flaws? I know Judy and Wendy, for instance, you both have written quite a few novels. Do you reuse flaws, or do you easily just find different flaws for different characters, or How does that process go for you?
I try not to reuse them if possible. Or if I use it again, I try and have the source of the wound different. But yeah, I mean, like, ideally every character I write is like their own sort of like person, right? And so then the reasons for why they might think or feel or have experienced a particular thing is different from someone else's. But I mean, like, saying that, there are some reasons or whatever for why someone might feel a particular way that are much stronger story hooks than others. So, like, you also have to keep story in mind. What's going to really pull someone in and keep them?
If I introduce a new character in any of my books, before I start to even write, I do a little mini bio for my own. This isn't in the novel, but for my own research. So I create a little life for the person. Where was he born? How old is he? What does he look like? What does he have? Any pets? Any blah blah blah? Is he married? Blah blah blah. That way, I actually get to know my character before I even start to write about him or her, and also it helps me when I'm really into the story. I can refer back, because it's sometimes it's mentioned where that person worked or where he came from, or his dog's name. If you've got that already in a little bio, you've got that there to refer to in your notes, so that you can go back and be consistent. And there again, as I say, it helps me build the character of the person by doing a little biography.
Do you add the flaw of that character into the biography, or do you not put that in that first
part? No, that comes with development as I'm writing, and the circumstances and what's happening and how they react and their expectations and blah blah blah. That's the sort of the development stage as I'm writing.
Okay. Because I know that I should, if I write another book, I think I'll start by knowing the flaw out of the gate, because we talked about this last meeting, Dave, about how the heroes can be too perfect, too much of a saint, and they don't do anything wrong. And I've fallen into that a little bit with some of my main characters, where they don't really have a strong enough flaw to make them interesting characters. So yeah, I think moving forward, I'd like to know kind of right out of the gate what flaw or two flaws or whatever it is that, you know, will make this character more interesting and not just a saint.
Yeah. Sometimes good stuff can come out of that, though. Like, if you have a character who's so driven to do the right thing all the time, that drive to do the right thing can then sometimes lead them to inadvertently hurt other people, right? Because they don't always necessarily see the entire full picture. Mm-hmm. So then that flaw, what seems like a virtue is in essence a flaw as well. So
sounds like Greek tragedy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I was reading somebody's essay. They sent me their essay. They're doing a film study on character, and they're doing Travis Bickle. You know who he is? From Taxi Driver? Yeah. You ever see the movie?
I think I might have seen it when I was young.
Yeah, it's a really famous movie, but mm-hmm. I was reading it, and I thought, you know, I could write a... where he's actually a heroic figure. You know what I mean? He's deeply flawed. Like, I mean, he suffers from post-traumatic stress. He drives around in a taxi all night, and he sees all the underside of downtown New York, and he ends up shooting people, and he becomes a hero. But maybe he is a hero, because he saves the Jodie Foster character, who's 14 years old. And I thought, if he didn't see the incredible violence he committed in the last 5 minutes of that movie, and he just picked up the newspaper story, because he gets away with it, and they write him up, but maybe he was a hero.
So he's a villain in the movie? Is he a villain?
Well, it's hard to say now. no, he's just a really, really interesting character.
Okay.
And he's got some good, I mean, you can sit there, he's a classic, he's got some really good points. Like, he's not the Joker, say, in Batman.
Okay,
he's not that bad. Clearly, yeah, he's clearly, but you know, you have to see the movie. Okay. Actually, see it. I think it's on Netflix. If you get Netflix,
yeah, we have Netflix.
You probably have Taxi Driver in here. It's one of those all-time classic films.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've heard of it. That's for sure.
Yeah, and you've probably seen even people parody scenes from it and all that stuff. Oh, yeah. But it's not maybe the same thing as what we're talking about. But he's got some flaws. But on the other hand, is he a heroic person in the end?
Right.
Have you probably seen that movie?
Yeah.
You know, in that last 5 minutes is pretty violent. Really violent.
Is it?
And you think this guy is pretty awful, but wait a minute. Stand back. And if you didn't see that 5 minutes of violence, you heard about a guy shot his way into a house of ill repute to save a 14-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
You think, well, maybe that guy wasn't too bad.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
unlikely hero.
Yeah.
Right.
A deeply flawed hero.
Deeply flawed hero.
Gotcha. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I feel like they'd be tough to write from scratch, a deeply flawed hero that you still is still convincing as a hero. I think I would have trouble anyways to make him or her convincing that you're flawed, really flawed, and a hero. Yeah, I guess because I've always come from the, they're really good. That's usually how I've written my main characters. They're good people, and they might have a couple little things wrong with them. But yeah, I just think I struggle going the other way and making it convincing.
Well, as long as your character believes they're a good person, it's a lot easier to, you know what I mean?
Like, right.
If that character believes that they're a good person and they're doing things for the right reason, then if you're writing from their perspective, then it comes out. And then you're relying on your reader to be able to be like, oh, well, actually, like what you're doing is maybe not the best thing to be doing. Mm-hmm. But your character, if they're true to themselves, then they'd be like, you can kind of, I don't know if convince is the right word, but kind of bring a reader along with you, as long as the character you're writing is truly convinced that what they're doing is the right thing to be doing.
I guess that's what would be tough for me is because, like, for instance, in my book, my villain thinks he's doing the right thing the whole time. But he's definitely, like, you can tell he's not a good dude. But how do you, yeah, I guess, how do you have that where you're saying, yeah, they are convinced they're doing the right thing, and the reader also thinks they're not the villain, right? Yeah, I don't know. I haven't explored that before, but.
I guess the trick would be to find this, for lack of a better way to say it, maybe their skewed perspective on things, right? How they have their villainous ways. And how it intersects with, well, this is an honorable decision. Like somewhere, maybe just for a moment, they overlapped. And that there's that one, for all the wrong reasons, they made a decision that fits the real world's considered honorable.
Yeah, another litter. You ever read Paradise Lost? Or did you didn't have to read, like, Inflicted with that? And I mean, it's about Satan, right? But actually, Satan's got some heroic. He's not necessarily, if you read, he's not that bad of a guy. Like, and he's got some heroic traits, some good leadership traits, and he probably thought he was leading a rebellion. And for that, he's punished. Like, I mean, at the end of it, like, and the guy that wrote it was John Milton, he was a Puritan, so you know where his sympathies are going to lay. But you walk away thinking, well, you know, kind of, I don't want to say humanizes Satan, but he makes Satan that, like, has a different dimension. And I like those type of characters, you know? Or even, like, we know, say, Robert E. Lee is more famous. I'm using historical examples now, but Robert E. Lee is more famous than the guy that beat him. Why is that? I mean, he was the head of the, like, I mean, he led the army of Northern Virginia in a rebellion against the U.S. that protected slavery. But yeah, a lot of people admire him more than the people that that he fought against.
So why is that? Do you know?
Well, he does have some noble characteristics. And a lot of people thought he was a more honorable person personally than the series of people he basically went up against. I mean, I could sit here and speculate why people might like him better, but or I don't want to say like him better, but he's more well known and people have For instance, I mean, they've even done studies in the States of American students, and they, Robert E. Lee is more recognizable than Ulysses S. Grant.
Okay.
Or George Gordon Meade, the guy that beat him at Gettysburg. Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Right.
Even though Lee lost. Mm-hmm. Right? But why do people write books singing his praises?
Well, I mean, that just makes me think, maybe if you're writing a character that you want to have flaws and be a hero, but also have things they do wrong, maybe look at historical figures, but like for help, right?
It's what you were saying. Did he think what he was doing was right?
Right.
And if it was, does that make him a terrible human being?
Right. It depends.
Yeah, well, I know. That's what I mean. That's why those type of characters are so much more interesting to read about. Mm-hmm. They're on the wrong side of history, say. But yet there's a lot of sympathy for them.
Right.
Right?
Because, yeah, a lot of times they are doing what they think is right.
Yeah, another character from him. Judy might remember the movie The Desert Fox. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Okay? It's a movie about Rommel. Well, but when you walk away from that movie, Rommel's a very simple thing. Even though he was leader of the Nazi Africa Corps, and Nazi forces in Normandy, you walk away from, and it was a British movie. It was a British movie made just after the war when there were a lot of veterans that would have gone to see that, and they walk away with thinking he's a sympathetic character. Huh. Now, 80 years later, we think, well, he was a Nazi.
Right.
But I think some of it is the charisma of the person.
Charisma. He was successful at what he did. Now, he was also involved in the plot to kill Hitler too in August 1944, which kind of makes him a little bit more sympathetic. But on the other hand, it didn't stop him from carrying out orders and doing what he was supposed to do.
Right.
But those type of characters, I think, when I'm reading, are really interesting. More than the plaster saint characters. Mm-hmm. You know?
There's more there, right?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, yeah. And in literature, like I said, I find those characters really... Even the Joker is kind of, in some ways, more interesting than Batman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the Johnny... Because
Batman always does the right thing.
Yeah, like, or Darth Vader. Isn't he kind of a little bit more interesting than Luke Skywalker?
Right, again, Luke always does the right thing.
He always does the right thing. He's even dressed in white and all that stuff. But isn't Darth Vader a little bit, his past, a little bit more...
More ambiguous, right?
More ambiguous, more interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, that's
interesting to find out what are their motives, right? As you're reading or as the story is being revealed to you, what drives that? It's much more interesting than, oh, what drives this goody two-shoes, right? Because everybody knows what drives that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. These other ones, what the heck drives that? You know, that's really enthralling.
Mm-hmm. And who was that played the Joker? River Phoenix? No.
Joaquin Phoenix?
Joaquin, was it him that played the Joker? Yeah.
The new one.
I mean, he starts about three or four times in the one Batman I saw explaining where he came from, but he contradicts it in the next story.
Yeah.
And so you really wonder, it kind of keeps that, you kind of, well, what is his story?
Yeah. Right.
And you never really know, because he kind of, at one point, you're we're kind of sympathetic, oh, yeah. And then he, like I said, he says the exact opposite the next time he says his. Mm-hmm. Doesn't that make him an interesting person?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes.
Like when they did the Halloween special on The Office. You notice how three characters dressed up as the Joker, nobody is Batman? There's a reason for that. Because they're more interesting.
Right.
The Joker is more interesting.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the villains, especially when the good guy is fairly perfect, basically. The villains are more interesting than those characters. Which maybe is a good thing to remember when you're creating a character. Don't make them too good, mm-hmm. because then they're boring.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Huron County Author Talk with your host, Hamilton Baker. If you'd like to learn more about the authors or to purchase one of their books, you can visit their websites. For more information about the podcast, you can visit the library's website at HuronCountyLibrary.ca. Stay tuned for our next episode that will release in 2 weeks. The music on this program is Echo by Alan McKellis. Thanks for listening.